Okay, the last, and it's not a case, but it's probably the most important thing that we're going to talk about for foreclosure this year, is that the Texas Attorney General issued an informal guidance letter August of 2020, just a month ago, month and a half ago, and he talked about whether foreclosure sales were impacted by the various governmental orders limiting gatherings. And so Governor Abbott issued an order, GA-28, that prohibited outdoor gatherings in excess of 100 people. It was later amended to be 10. And the attorney general looked at it and said the foreclosure statutes require a public sale. So if you exclude anyone from the sale, it makes the foreclosure suspect. And so my personal opinion is I have, out of hundreds of foreclosures I've done, I can't think of one where I had more than 10 people or even 10 people at the foreclosure. I mean, there may be hundreds of people milling around the courthouse, but I've never had it. But nevertheless, because of this guidance letter, I think the general consensus is it's not safe to do a foreclosure until local authorities or the governor amend this and allow unlimited people to attend a foreclosure sale. And I think you would be subject to having the title company second guess this in a future. So the important non-case there. All right, so let's move on to some debtor-creditor issues. And the first one we want to deal with is Chenier, which is a description of collateral. And I know this seems to come up all the time, but this was a, like these two big energy companies trying to build a liquid natural gas facility on the coast. And to get started, Chenier agreed to Parallel could get started on it using a sub, and they funded it up to almost $50 million. They evidenced it by a note and security agreement, I guess, to be safe. And lo and behold, after a while, Chenier stopped funding, and Parallel wouldn't pay them back, so they foreclosed on the security interest in the Parallax sub, which actually owned the property they had done all the funding for. So in their security agreement, it had this language that's noted there on the fourth or fifth bullet point, that it covered, quote, all other tangible and intangible property and assets of Parallax. So what they were trying to get at was the interest in this subsidiary. So the court looked at it and said the UCC 9108 says generally a description that calls for all of the debtor's assets or all personal property, that is not sufficient under the UCC. Let's flip to the next page, man. Thanks. Okay. There is another UCC provision, 9504, that says for financing statements, all assets and all personal property work. So I want to bring that distinction out between the security agreement and the financing statement. And so here we're talking about the security agreement. So this generic description did not work. The court held that the use of the words intangible property was broader than the UCC categoric description of general intangibles, and therefore that was not sufficient. So remember, that description was all tangible and intangible property, and they viewed that impermissibly broader than general intangibles. So there was a dissent here that raised a couple of issues, but I think the general case law is consistent that you must be specific in your security agreement with a detailed description of the collateral, or use the applicable UCC generic category, such as goods, inventory, and in this case, general intangibles would have covered the description of that collateral of the subsidiary interest. Okay. Next, we have a case where Comerica was both a partner in a deal and a lender. I've always heard never to do that, but in this case, they did. They made a loan. It was guaranteed by Lone Star Opportunity Fund, but then Lone Star Opportunity Fund had capital calls under the venture that they were a partner in. And on the first capital call, Comerica made their $1 million payment, but Lone Star didn't, but then used the money to pay down the loan from another bank and distribute money out to its subsidiary, which didn't make Comerica happy. So on the second capital call, Comerica dutifully paid their capital call expected, and Lone Star failed to pay, but Comerica was ready, filed an injunction prohibiting their use of those funds. So the issue in this case, it's an injunction case, was whether there was sufficient irreparable harm or inadequate remedy to justify the injunction. And the court recited long judicial precedents against judicial relief for a future judgment. Now, it just so happened Comerica had an $800,000 settlement claim that they could use, but the other millions they weren't. But they pressed it, and for the inadequate remedy, the court looked at it and said Comerica didn't have to prove actual insolvency. They could look at the financial wherewithal, the limited cash resources, the questionable value of their assets, and their history of conversion and dissipation to satisfy the non adequate remedy at law.